excited to start a new limud,
a whole new part of your day. Some chaver, this is your first time jumping in to the world of learning halacha be'ian and seeing how fundamentally, though in our minds, sometimes gemara and halacha seem like they're two different areas of limud. They're fundamentally the same. The bifurcation is artificial, and we're beginning to get our feet wet and seeing how a sugya unfolds naturally, organically, from the Gemara and Rishonim through the Torah of Beis Yosef, to Shulchan Aruch, to Halacha Maisa. All of us, whether this is our first year in the Chavur or not, we're jumping into a new sector of Halacha. We're jumping into the beginning of the second Chelek of Yerodeim, which focuses on the dinim that come from Maseches. I come from Maseches Avodah Zarah towards the beginning of the second Chelek Yerodeah, in particular the Dinim of Kashrus. Kashrus and Kashrus related issues that flow from Maseches Avodah Zarah, which are later in the year, maybe Chanukah, maybe beyond Chanukah or so, will turn our attention to Simin Kuf Yud Gimel, maybe others that deal with Machal Yakum, Bishal Akum, and so on and so forth. We start the year with Tfilas Kelim, which, as we're seeing, is a fascinating din. It's very relevant, very rich. And you began to see over the last week or so that almost all the dinim are rooted, core sugya is really less than an amud, an ayin hay on the days all the way at the end of Masechta Avodah Zarah. And as you saw, that Gemara is particularly dense. Very, very, very masudr and very, very, very stacked. You have a Mishnah, and then the Gemara gets right down to what's the source of Pesukim. The Gemara has a Braisa, Tana, you got the Tvilas Kelim. The Mishnah talks about Kashering Kelim. We'll get back to that in a moment. Braisa talks about Tovelin Kelim. Got a Tovel of the Kelim and a Mikvah of Arbaim Sa. Sounds like a typical Mikvah. And then the Gemara proceeds to talk in largely a very, very structured, tightly structured format about the rules, the parameters of Tfilas Kelim. The Gemara lays out that there are three major... The source of Tfilas Kelim is the Pesukim in Parshas Matos. The Torah talks about the various... The Klal Yisrael were told in the 40th year of the Midbar to go to war against Midian. The war is militarily incredibly successful. And the Pesukim over the course of Parshas Matos talk about how Klal Yisrael were supposed to dispose of and deal with the captives and with assets that they captured. Different dinim for different assets, different sorts of things, who gets what, how it's divided financially among the soldiers and the rest of Klal Yisrael, what's going to the Mishkan. Pesukim talk about the need, in addition to figuring out the dinim amanus, there's a tumah of the tahara issue. The Pesukim say you brought back clothing from the battlefield, you brought back wooden kelim from the battlefield. Those are things which are makabel tumah. Likely, they were makabel tumah's mace on a battlefield, so you're going to have to go through the process of the Pesukim say of hazah shlishi or shvi. You're going to have to sprinkle out people or kelim that became tamei tumah's mace. You're going to have to sprinkle them with water that had been mixed with the Efer Parah Adumah or to mitar them. Dinim that already appear early in Chumash by Midbar and Parshas Chukas, and they're reviewed here. Then the Torah says, ah! Note the following, a little bit of a twist. If it's metal, if it's Zav, Kesef, Nechoshes, if it's gold, silver, or copper, if it's iron, tin, or lead, then the Pesukim talk about some unique instructions. And those unique instructions are the Pesukim that our Gemara focuses on. Perek Lamed Aleph, starting from Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Torah said earlier, right before, Pesukim Yutes, Chaf, Babi Mitar, the people about Mitar, the Begadim and the Kleites. Now the Torah says, well, if it's metal, achadazava, kesev, nechoshes, and so on and so forth, then you're going to have to pass it through fire, v'taher, it'll be tahar, achva mei nida yischata, there needs to be nichitu in mei nida, and if it doesn't go through fire, then taviru b'mayim. The Gemara derives from those psukim. The Gemara sees two allusions in those psukim to, as you saw, to Tefilas Kelim, the language of Ta'aviru Bamayim, and Ach B'mei Nida Yischata. Mayim, the Gemara says, May Nida, Nida water, Mayim Shanida Tavelspam. The mikvah, same way a woman is a Nida, she emerges from that state of Nida by going to mikvah. So the same type of mikvah, the Kelim that brought back from the battlefield have to be brought to mikvah. Okay, so that's how the Gemara opens with the Menorah and Emili. Where does it come from? The Gemara sees two different allusions. The Gemara handles why you need two psukim, Hachmei Nida Yischata, and the Taher, Tavir Bamoyim. And then the Gemara gets into the rules. And the Gemara says, the Gemara lays out in a very, very stacked, tight format, three criteria that a Kli has to meet in order to require Tefilas Kelim. There's a question of function, a question of material, and a question of ownership history. Function has to be Klei Suda. Material, the Psukim say, has to be metal, and the Gemara adds glass also requires Tefilas Kelim. Presumably midrabanan. And ownership history means it needs to have formerly belonged to a Nachri and presently belong to a Jew. The method of conveyance does not have to be violent, as was in the original example, where it was conquest or war. It could just be a sale. I went to the store and I very peacefully bought a frying pan, or the Nachri gave me a present, whatever it is. But the Gemara lays out those three criteria. Function has to be Klei Suda. If I have a metal bike, I go to a non-Jewish owned bike store and I buy a metal bike. It's a metal Klei I bought from the Nachri, but it doesn't require a Tevila because it's not Klei Suda. The Gemara says, that's what the Torah is talking about, Klei Suda. Number two, the Torah is talking about metal material. Number three, the Torah is talking about something that used to belong to a Nachri and now belongs to a Jew. Then the Gemara at the end gets into some more of the details, specific cases and other details about Tefilas Kelim. So that's sort of the bird's eye view on this sugya, and it lays out for us the first thing just to be aware of as we wade into the world of Tefilas Kelim is just in terms of the structure of the dinim, how the siman is going to be structured conceptually. So as is the case in so many areas of halacha, we're going to be looking, the dinim will divide into two chunks, the dinim of the chefza and dinim of the maisa. Not necessarily in a lamedish sense, if you like it is, but what I mean is just in terms of thinking about the ideas, they're going to be dinim in terms of what sort of kalim requires tefilas kalim. That's one area. And the other major question is, assuming you have to do tefilas kalim, how do you go about doing tefilas kalim? What are the dinim about the process? So which kalim, just like we talk about the tkiya shofar, you have to magdir what's the kasher shofar, you have to magdir how you're toke, when and how you're toke. They talk about sukkah. Say those are learned Masechta Sukkah. So the first parak in 2/3 up to Daf Chavei or so, loosely speaking, are about what constitutes a kasher sukkah. And at the end of the second parak is, given that you have a kasher sukkah, what do you do? What does yeshiva sukkah look like? When, how, and so on and so forth. So it's a common categorization. And it's going to be very dominant here. We're going to try to deal with number. That's how we're going to, in coming weeks, until Yom Tov and beyond, hopefully we're going to structure ourselves in that way. We're going to first deal with the different criteria. I'll give out bleeding out at the end of the Chabura. The next time I'm coming, so we'll begin to look at Klei Seuda. Then we'll have to talk about materials and ownership history. We'll see there may be, in addition to the three criteria that the Gemara lays out, there may be a phantom fourth criterion as well. We'll get to that in Mirtz Hashem in due time. And then, after that, we'll move to the questions of the Ofen HaTfilah. The Bracha, and how you hold it, and what's the Kasher Mikvah, and so on and so forth. Because of that, the Shulchan Aruch sort of interlaces these two questions of which kalim and how you do the tefillah. So we're going to try to pick them apart a little bit going forward as we work our way through that. Hopefully will help us to absorb the dinim as best we can. So that's sort of the bird's eye view of what we're headed into. One other preliminary point, and then we'll dig into the question of the source of tefillah's kalim, which will be our main focus right now, The other preliminary point is just to be aware of the following. And that is, as we already saw in just talking about the psukim, that there are several different processes that a Jew might be called upon to do in treating a kli. And there'll be situations where you need one or two or all three. And it's important just to have clarity in our heads. I think a number of discussions over the course of the afternoon Seder last week plus about this. So just to sort of clarify, just lay this out. The process that is most familiar to us, perhaps, and at least that we've heard about the most, I suspect, and the process that the Torah here is definitely describing here in Matos, is kashering kelim, hagalas kelim. I have a kli that absorbed treifa flavor. I have a kli that was used, let's say the simplest, that was used to cook or bake or fry or grill non-kosher food. So the Gemara has an idea, probably based on psukim. This may be one of those psukim, that not only did the Torah forbid us from eating a piece of pork or a piece of arla, but even a benign potato, throw the pork into the cholent, and not only cannot eat the piece of ham, but I cannot even eat the potato. Potato isn't ham, it's not besar behemotamea, but it absorbed the flavor of ham. The tam ke'ikr, that's the principle of tam ke'ikr, that if the Torah forbade me from eating besar behemotamea, it also means the Torah forbade me from eating some other originally benign food, which has absorbed the flavor of the treifa flavor, the flavor of ham. So this is one of the sources, which is probably a machlokes rishonim, is probably a din d'oraisa, and this is probably one of the sources. Not only can I not eat the potato that absorbed the flavor of ham, I cannot even eat food that was fried in a pan that was formerly used to fry ham. That's one of the things that the psukim here are saying. That if you have a pan or a grill that was used dry heat to prepare treifa food, so that it absorbed the treifa flavor very, very deeply, called the Rosh Ba'esh, something that the Nachrim had used to grill or to fry, so I'm going to have to extract or destroy the absorbed flavor using fire. Tavir Ba'esh V'Taher. You have to pass it through fire. We call that libun. The language of Chazal is called libun. The easiest way to do it nowadays, often, is to throw in self-clean oven. That gets it up to 950 or so. And that's the end of any flavor that went in, even if the flavor went in with dry heat. And then there's another din that the Tanam talk about on Ayin Hay in the base. And that is, if there's a lesser level of absorption of flavor, it wasn't through dry heat, like grilling or frying, pan frying, but it was through wet heat. I boiled, I had a cholent, or I had a chicken soup with treif chicken, so that's wet heat, it was boiled. So then I don't need to put the pot through libun, it's enough to put it through hag'olah, to pass it through, to dip it into boiling hot water, which may be what the Torah is saying here. Kol shelo yavo ba'esh, taviru ba'moim. That may or may not be what that pasuk means, or that might mean to the Caleb. So again, that's one process that I might want to do to a kli, is to remove the treifa flavor through whatever process. I figure how the treifa flavor went in. Kibola o kachpoto, the way it got absorbed is going to dictate the way I extract it. If it went in more deeply through dry heat, I'm going to need dry heat to get it out. I need libun. If it just went in through wet heat, so I could do libun, but I don't have to. It's adequate to just do hagal, just to dip it into boiling hot water. That's... Many of us are probably familiar with Haggalah, maybe even Libun from Kashrin before Pesach. So that's one type of process. That's a physical process of removing or incinerating the physical treifa flavor that's absorbed into the walls of the pot or pan or fork or knife. That's Hechsher Kelim. There's another process is that we have not been really zocha to see, at least not fully, in probably 15, 16, 1700 years, and that is being metaher kelim, or being metaher a person. A person becomes tameh, a kli becomes tameh, so you go tameh in various ways. I touched a sheretz, I touched a nevela, I walked into a bayis hamenuga, I touched a seat that a nidin, that a zav sat on, whatever it is, or contact with a mace, that became tameh, I need to become tahar. and need to, if I want to become tahar. So sometimes tevila b'mikvah is enough. Go to mikvah, and then that night you'll be tahar. Sometimes you need tevila and bring karbanos. If it's tumas meis, you tevila is insufficient. You need hazar shlishi or shvi. You need to sprinkle the personal clean with paraduma water, and only then you can go to mikvah become tahar. We don't have a paraduma. That's why full tahara has been elusive for 1700 years, because we don't have a paraduma. So that's the second process. If you want, if a kli became tame, you want it to become tahar, so you might have to take it to mikvah, or you may have to sprinkle the paraduma water and then take it to mikvah. That's the second process. And then a third process is what our sugya is focused on, which is if I bought kitchen utensils or dining utensils from an achri and I want to use them myself for my food, so I need to take those kalim, those pots and pans, to the mikvah before I am allowed to use them. That's tefilas kalim. Those are three different processes. One is meant to hechsher kalim, hagala and libra is meant to remove the treif of flavor that got physically absorbed into the kli. Tevila b'mikvah, and perhaps hazah with the mepar aduma, is to remove a status of tuma. And then there's what we're dealing with, which is tevilas kalim when you buy them from the nachri. They're not all the same. You're going to kasher kalim whether you got them from the nachri or they became treif in your own kitchen. No nachri involved. I messed up. I accidentally used the fleishik pan with the cheese, so it's treif. I have to kasher. And meanwhile, to tovelin kalim, our tovelin kalim only applies if I get it from a nachri. But on the other hand, as the Gemara says, even if it's kasher, even if it was never used, I don't have to kasher, but I still have to tovel. And then tahara, also, tevil is also used for tahara, but to be matara things is only relevant if you intend to engage with something which is kadosh. You intend to go into mikdash, you intend to eat a karban, or eat teruma, or eat maaser sheni, or you have some chumrah to treat yourself as though you're about to do one of those things, so then you need to be tar. But if you're going through life, unfortunately, without any bikurim, without any maaser sheni, without any teruma or kachim, so we don't need to be tar. And none of us probably are tar, because we all have a lingering tumas meis that we can't get rid of without a paradu. So three, so that's a very, very important point. Three unrelated processes. It's confusing because, again, some situation you need only one, some situation you need two or all three, and then sort of they all involve water in some way or another. Okay, and with that in mind, with those hakdamas, number one, an overview of the Gemara, the psukim, and then the two areas of the dinim, which kalim are chayiv, and if you're chayiv, what does the process look like, and finally, there's clarity about the three different processes that are distinct from one another. Kashering kalim, bimatahir kalim, and tevilas klei seuda that were bought from a nachri. What we could call tevila nisr v'hater, as opposed to tevila of tuma v'tahir. So with that, let's dive in now. The opening topic in the Gemara, and often conceptually the opening topic, is where these dinim come from. If it didn't daraisa, you want to know what the psukim. If it didn't rabbani, you want to know mipnei ma. The source is not a pasuk, but a concern. What drove Chazal to institute the didn't rabbanan? And most fundamentally, is it daraisa or drabbanan? By way of introduction, you know, the Mishnah itself, before we even get to the Gemara, the Mishnah itself is a little bit mysterious. Three types of kalim. The ones that, what's usually used in fire, understand. So that he said, you have to do libun if it's a frying pan or a grill. If it's dark or lahagil, it's usually used with hot water, so then you need like a pot, a soup ladle, you only need to do haga'ala. Well, what's that first category? Dark or lahatbil. What does that mean? Dark or lahatbil. So Rashi says that means tefilas kalim. If it wasn't boleya, if it was boleya tarfus, you got a kasher, and then you'll tovel it subsequently. But if it wasn't bolei any tarfus, yeah, you bought a fruit bowl for the nafri. It's not bolei anything. It's just used for cold, dry fruits. So there's no bolias, even if the fruit are treif somehow. Orla, teva. So then, that's what Rashi says. Dark lat bol yakdo. That's what the Rashi says. The Ritva, you may have seen, he says, no. It's that's not really parallel. Dark lahagil, yagil abim bor, that's the way it's used, and then the way you kasher it. So he says, dark lahatu means it got used with cold water, or cold grease, cold stuff. It hasn't absorbed any flavor into the interior of the kli walls, but it may have some trefaguk residue on the surface. So then you have to scrub the surface clean. You don't have to kasher it. You have to scrub the surface clean before you use it. That's what the Ritva says. It's very parallel. Now, what that means often it's a good question to be sensitive to. You come across a concept. Where's the earliest place that Chazal deal with it? Is this a din that already appears in the Mishnais? The din appears in Brisos. Only the Amoraim the first to speak of it explicitly. The Rishonim the first to speak of it explicitly. Where does it first appear explicitly in the Torah Shel Peh? It's an interesting question to ask yourself. And we know that Yehuda Nasi did there was a Melechas Borer, and the vast majority, in compiling the Mishnais, the vast majority of the material he had from other Tanaim did not make it into the Mishnais. Some of what he didn't make the Mishnais make it into Tosefta, into other collections of Brisos. So the Rabbi Yonasi was very, very careful what he led into Mishnais. We often paskin like those other Brises, but they didn't make it into Mishnais. It's sometimes worth being noticing that when you have a din or a concept that actually appears in the Mishnah, where does it appear in the Mishnah? How many times does it appear in the Mishnah? So here it's actually Machlokas HaRishonim. Does Tfilas Kelim appear in the Mishnais? The Tanan definitely talk about it, because the opening Brisa in the Gemara, the Tana, says explicitly, you need to do Tfilas Kelim in the Mikvah. But whether the Mishnah talks about it or not, so that's a machlokas harishonim. The Rashi says yes, the Ritva says no. The Rambam, when you look at the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, at first it sounds like he is including it. Or not, because he has four categories. Things that only need tefillah, things that need rinsing, things that need hagala, things that need leaven. So at first you're sort of thrown. Unless you might wonder whether there's some sort of new girsa. There is no new girsa that Rambam had. You look in the Kafach edition of the Mishnah, so the Pirush Rambam is the same girsa of the Mishnah. And it's pretty clear there, in the language of Pirush Mishnah, that he yelled like Rashi. That's what it sounds like. He held like Rashi. It sounds like, it's not absolutely Mukhrah, but he seems to think that it sounds from the way the Rambam is presented, talking about the Mishnah, that he thinks that the Mishnah itself is already talking about Tevilas Kelim. It's not just something we know from the Gemara. In terms of the way the Rambam presents Halacha Gimel, that's because there's a Braisa later at the bottom of Ayin Hei Mabez that does definitely lay out all these four categories. Some things don't need any Hakashim whatsoever, just take them to mikvah. Then some things need to have the surface clean, or hagal with hot water, or leaven. Pipasha, the Rambam is aligned with Rashi, that the Mishnah does already address itself to Tfilas Kelim. And the Ritva says no, but the Ritva agrees that the Tanan definitely knew of Tfilas Kelim. They talked about the brace on the top of the Yamen, brace on the bottom of the Yamen. Okay. But this brings us to the more fundamental question, which is, do the psukim, forget about it, does the Mishnah mention it, do the psukim mention it? In other words, is it Daraisa or is it Rabban? That's going to be obviously a far more consequential question. So the Gemara does present this from psukim, as we said before. The Gemara then, Minan Emili, usually we've shown a point that elsewhere in Yuma, and elsewhere that Minan Emili usually introduces a real drasha gemura deraisa. And the Gemara has trichuses also. The Gemara doesn't just say a pasuk here, a pasuk there, which already could mean it's a real drasha. The Gemara then goes on to say, why I need this one, why I need that one. If I would have had this pasuk, I would have made this mistake, why I need that pasuk, why I need that mistake. The presentation of the Gemara sounds like these are real bona fide drashas, and that means that it's generating a real din deraisa. That's the simple reading of the simple reading of the Gemara. Ibn Ezra, as you saw, Ibn Ezra writes, interestingly, and he was a great Pashtun, Ibn Ezra writes, I wouldn't have thought this pasuk means tefillas kelim. Ach, maybe dayis chatzar, that sounds like it's talking about like a different process, kind of talking about tahara with mei pardon. He said, but Chazal said otherwise. What's his language? Daitam rechavim midatenu. Striking language. He's mevatel himself to the Gemara. Okay. The Rashi seems to say, have his cake and eat it too. Rashi is interesting that the Ibn Ezra doesn't say this. Rashi says there are two layers of understanding. They can both be daraisa potentially. Right? There's a pshusha emikos of deep pshuto, and then and there's the level of drasha. Kadosh Baruch, when Kadosh Baruch gave the chumash to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai over the course of the 40 years in the Midbar, he taught the Torah Shabbosav, the Chemish Chumash Torah, and he taught it not only the basic concepts and ideas of Torah Shabbal Peh, but also the Midrash Torah and Drasha Spam. Kadosh Baruch told Moshe Rabbeinu there, and when I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wrote the Chumash with multiple layers of meaning embedded within the text, and here are the tools you're going to use, and the Chachmei Torah and future generations will use to mine the Chumash to extract those added nuggets of meaning. And when Chazal darshan a pasuk, a bona fide drasha gemura daraisa means that they are figuring out using those mining tools, kal v'chomer, gzeir shava, rivui mi'ed, so forth, to tap in to discover added dinim that Kadosh Baruch Hu left for us to find, and those are dinim daraisa. That's part of the meaning of the chumash. There's a pshusha mikra, im appears to be a pshuto. That's true and binding, and there's also additional layers of meaning. They're both correct interpretations of the Chumash on the level of Daraisa, Tarshu Luchsav and Tarshu Alpeh. So that's why Rashi presents it. He says, Lefi Pshuto, Yibbenezin Dayez Chata means Mei Paraduma. And after all, as we said, mentioned before, the Psukim in the previous paragraph used that language explicitly to mean Mei Paraduma in the context of Beg and Ecleates. And he says, Rabbi Seinu Darshu, that it also means Tefillas Kelim. That's the way Rashi presents it. Sounds like both Daraisa. Ramban, in the Pirush al Torah, is not so happy with this. And the Ramban, who ironically is the one who very often will say Pirush HaMikra and Drasha, he, Ibn Ezra didn't say that. Ibn Ezra seems like he was Mevatel, even Pirush HaMikra to what Chazal say. And that's the pasuk absolutely only means tefillas kelim. Ramban raises the possibility that the pasuk doesn't mean tefillas kelim at all. The Ramban raises the possibility. The Chacham point that there elsewhere the Ramban may disagree with this, but at least when he's writing Pirush al Torah, he seriously entertained the possibility that these are not drushas gemuras daraisa. As now as they're not pirush al mikra, it's not even a real drasha. It's merely an asmachta. Asmachta means al pi pashtos. That this is not a drasha that conforms to the rules of Mishnah Torah drashas then, therefore it doesn't generate a real din daraisa. The source for the din is Rabbanan. Chazal goes to the din Rabbanan, and then they point out there is a pasuk that sounds a little bit like it. So it's a smach, it's a remez, but it's not the source. The source for the din is Takana Rabbanan. Therefore, the binding power of the din is Rabbanan. It's a pasuk that sounds a little bit like it. It's a way of at the very least remembering the din, reminding people of the din, but it's not that interpretation is not strong enough to fit into the rules of Mishnah Torah Drasha, and therefore it's not a drasha gemura that would generate a din daraisa. It doesn't generate anything. It's just a remez to a din that was generated by Takanas Chazal, invented by Chazal. Chazal the right to invent dinim, to misakin dinim, to be goes exeres. So that's what the Ramban seems to say, at least to entertain the possibility that this is not a drasha, not an apshul shamikra, it's not even a drasha daraisa. He says that's the Gemara, even though the Gemara says non immediately, it's all handling with asmachtas. That's what the Ramban raises. He says tavir b'mayim, that means, as I said before, hagala, that means putting it through hot water, yischata, not only do, as we mentioned the psukim earlier, he points to unklus. Unklus says that yischata b'meini da doesn't mean a mikveh, it means haza'a. Why the Ramban didn't say, okay, that unklus is giving pshuto, but the Gemara is giving a drasha daraisa, I'm not sure why the Ramban is not more open to that idea. But that's the way the Ramban takes this possibility very seriously, that within the psukim may be the Rabban. So this question of whether tefillas came with daraisa Rabban, I think it plays out on three levels. The first level is just in terms of the psukim. Obviously, any question of daraisa Rabban ultimately is a question of psukim. Is this in the psukim? Then it's daraisa. If it's not in the psukim, then it must be, the source must be some takan Rabban, unless you have a lacha moshe v'sinai, which is daraisa. So the level of psukim that we already discussed, this dion and the Gemara raised the darshans, it has three chasas. But on the page in the Kuros Gedolos, it seems like a three-way machlokas hataraim, even as it sounds like it thinks pshuto shel mikra is tefillas kelim. Rashi says pshuto shel mikra, we're talking about haga'ala, the other two processes, haga'ala or tahara, but the drasha, the alderach drasha, potentially daraisa, is talking about tefillas kelim. And then Ramban entertains the possibility that tefillas kelim is not even a drasha daraisa, it's merely an asmachta. It should be noted that the Balei HaTosfos get involved in this discussion with the psukim also in two different ways. Number one, Tosfos here. Number two, Tosfos elsewhere. Tosfos here, Dira Maschal Mayim, Tosfos points out that Min HaTorah, if you want to be metaher, here you come back to the difference between tahara, tefillah for tahara, and tefillah kelim for food. To be metaher kelim, Min HaTorah, the mikvah only has to be revius if it's a small kli. 40 saw for a mikvah, that's only daraisa to mitara person. To mitara kli, if it's small, min HaTorah, enough with the revius. Midrabana, you need the memsa, or if the kli is big, it has to fit. So Tosa says, yeah. He says, even though min HaTorah, you only need revius to tovel kalim, the need for memsa is only midrabana. Tosis makes this distinction. Hainu tefilas tuma, but tefilas kli midyan, chidushu, that's different. Our din of tefilas kelim is not the same as tefilah for tuma purposes, and that means mem saw, obviously, min ha-torah. Okay, so that's one context in which Tosis is assuming that we're talking real daraisa. And that goes back to the drasha. Maybe there was some later we shall talk about more. Mayim shani the tovel said, mei nida means 40 saw. Normally, tefillas kelim for tumah is only revius min haTorah, but tefillas kelim for food, that requires memsa even min haTorah. Why? Because that's what mei nida means. Tosas elsewhere takes it a step further. Chavel in his footnotes, fantastic, magnificent footnotes on the Ramban haTorah, in his magnificent edition of Ramban haTorah, he sends you to Tosas and elsewhere, in Yuma, Yevamos, where Tosas takes a step further. Takes a step further. Well, Chanan gets very excited about this in Kovos Ha'aretz because Tosfos appears in Yevamos. Tosfos appears in a couple places in Shas. Tosfos wants to know, how do you know that a nida has to go to mikvah? I mean, Sukkim say nida has to go to mikvah. Tosfos says, and this is what Chanan stells on, Rav Engel stells on this, a similar type of distinction that we have by Tefillas Kelim. Yes, to become tahar, so you won't make the things that you touch tamei. The psukim say, I believe at the end of Metzora, that she had need that to go to mikvah. Okay, but how about to be muteris labaila? Later in Chumash Vayikra, the nida that man woman can't be intimate together if she's a nida, to remove that status also requires tefillah mikvah. Where does that come from in the Chumash? So by machloka gaonim rishonim Tosis quotes. So Rabbeinu Tam says, Avodah Zarah Ein Hei, comes from here. Mei Nida, Mayim Shani Tavel Spen. Obviously, a Nida has to go to Mikvah. So Rabbeinu Tam says, you see, Mamish, this is really a Drasha Gemura Daraisa. It's not only a Drasha Gemura Daraisa to tell us the din of Tevilas Kelim, it's a Drasha Gemura Daraisa to tell us the din of Tevilas Nida. Nida also has a distinction between
Tumah v'tahara and Isur v'heter. How do you know that min ha-Torah she's not muteras labayla until she goes to mikvah? Rabbeinu Tam thinks this drasha of Avos Zarah and Hayin Beis. Wow. Tosfos is all invested, number one, in the distinction between tefillah for Tumah and tefillah for Isur v'heter, both in the context of Nida and the context of Kelim. And Tosfos clearly, Rabbeinu Tam in particular, others disagree, clearly see this drasha as being absolute. Drasha Gemura min ha-Torah. Okay. Now, there is one other Rishon who takes a stand on this, and he's a little ambiguous, and that is the Rambam. Rambam does not count this as a mitzvah, number one, which means either it's not Daraisa or it's not Torah Shebichsav. Okay. A din that Daraisa, but based on a drasha, the whole din is based on a drasha, it won't be a mitzvah. The fact that it doesn't count it as a mitzvah, that just may mean that he, unlike the Ibn Ezra, doesn't think it's true Rosh HaMikra. It's a drasha, like Rashi said. But there's more. Halacha Perek Yuzayin, Halacha Hey, he says, he says, it's not Le'inyan Tumah V'Tahara, Ela Midivrei Sofrim. Okay, so now when he's saying the distinction that Tosfos made between tevila for to be matara something versus tevila for Isur v'Heter, but he doesn't just say it's not to matara, rather it's Isur v'Heter. He says not to matara, it's midivrei sofrim. The remez is, he quotes these psukim, remez. Then later on halacha vav, he says lo chiyuvu, they, meaning the sofrim. It sounds like it's a din derabbanan. And then what's more is if the first layer, the first, you know, context in which this question of Daraisa Rabban plays out is just darshaning the psukim, which we saw again, Ibn Ezra, Rashi, Rabban, Tosfos in several places, and the Rambam, the way the Rambam describes it, the second layer is nafkaminas ladina. Obviously, the most common nafkamin in Daraisa Rabbanan is Safi Daraisa Lochem or Safi Rabban Lakula. So that comes up, as you saw, on this Amud. After the Gemara lays out the basic three criteria that a Kli needs, once again, as I mentioned, the Gemara, then the Abamyam gets in some of the details. One of those details is a Shaila the Gemara has, Mashkanta. We'll get to the details, but a question of, I take an item from the Nachri as collateral on a loan. I lend money to the Nachri, Jewish lender, Pipasha, that's what the Gemara means. I lend money to the Chaim lends money to Christopher, and Chaim says to Christopher, I need collateral, I need security, I'm lending you $20,000, give me something to hold on to. So Christopher says, okay, here's my grandmother's set of silverware. So sometimes the agreement is, you can hold on to it, you can't use it. Sometimes the agreement is, no, you can hold on to it, you can use it. And if I repay the loan, I get it back. If I don't repay the loan, you keep it. Okay. So in a case where I have the right, if I don't have the right to use it, so I'm not allowed to use it. But in the case where the agreement wasn't have the right to use it, does it have to go to mikvah? Is it mine or is it the Nachri's? It's sort of in between. It's more than just borrowed, because I may end up keeping it if he never pays me back. On the other hand, I may not end up keeping it. So it's sort of a gray area, the Gemara says. It's more than just borrowing it from the Nachri, but it's less than outright buying it from the Nachri. So the Gemara wants to know, what's the status of Mashkanta? I took this silver as a collateral from the Nachri, and the agreement was I have the right to use it. Do I have to tovel it before I use it, or I could just use it without tefillah? Is it like bought, or is it like borrowed? So the Rif points out that the Gemara never really answered the question. The Gemara sort of leaves it open and doesn't come to a clear conclusion. The Rif just says, Ibayd lav shita. It doesn't tell you, and therefore, what? So most of Rishonim say, Ibayd lav shita, and therefore, you got a tovel. Safik luchurma. Tosfos says, Tovel b'li bracha. The Safik bracha, you're not going to make a bracha, but the Safik tefillah is luchurma. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says, Safik lakula. So the Rishonim get excited about this. The Rashba, the Ritva, the Ran, they all point out, generally they point out that you see that's Rambam l'shitaso. That's the Rambam l'shitaso, halacha vava. If you borrow or mishkein, either one, you don't need tefillah. Why is he being make on the suffix? They say, yeah, Rambam l'shitaso, that's all din drabanan, suffix drabanan, le kula, are the Rishonim. Some of the Rishonim are explicit, as you saw.
So yeah, the Rambam says it's suffering on the kula, but we don't hold that it's Rabbanan, therefore we don't hold that that suffering is the kula. That's sort of the second layer of how it plays out. However, here too there is a little more complexity. You saw in that just in terms of the psukim, there's room to push back. Is it clear that the psukim are saying? Is it not clear that the psukim are saying? How do you read the psukim? Here too, there is room to push back. There's a Rav Yah that goes Maimin in the bottom of the Rambam quotes this Rav Yah. Rav Yah also held Suffolk Tzvios Kalim Lahakel. And the Mordechai and the Rav Yah, and Mordechai the Hagos Maimini and the Rush were all contemporaries. They're all Talmidim of the Maimon of Wittenberg in the 1300s. So the Mordechai lines up the Rambam and the Rav Yah very tightly. The Rambam and Rav Yah, they both, Rav Yah was a German Rishon. But the Mordechai said, yeah, the Rav Yah and the Mordechai, the Rav Yah and the Rambam, they both said Safek Lahakel, other Rishonim said Safek Lahakel. The Rav Yah gives a different svar. The Haggadah of Mordechai just says Rav Yah was Makel, doesn't explain why. The Haggadah of Maimon explains a little bit. Very intriguing, a little mysterious. Not because Safek Draban Lahakel. He says this is not the type of din where you say Safek Luchamra. It sounds like he's saying because it's not an absolute Chiyuv anyhow. If you bought it from the Kli, if I buy a pair of scissors and use it for paper, not I'll be pashtus, I don't have to tovel. If you want to use it for food, then you have to tovel. So that's up to you. Number one, I don't have to use it for food. If I need something for food, I could have used something else for food. Find a different fork. It's not an absolute chiyuv. It's not like esrog or tefillin. It's an absolute chiyuv. It's an intriguing svar that Rav Yah raises. We'll come back to it, Bili Neder, some more when we get deeper into Hilchos Tefilas Kelim, when we talk about electronic Kelim. This Rav Yah may be very, very significant. But for now, the Rav Yah is presenting an alternative explanation of why you would say Safek Lahakel. So you could say Safek Lahakel without necessarily holding the Tefilas Kelim Drabanan. Could be to Daraisa, but it's a particular type of Daraisa. The way the Daraisa is structured, it's a contingent mitzvah. Loosely speaking, it's like a mitzvah sarashos. The Rambam speaks about Hilchos Brachos, Perek Yudav. It's a contingent mitzvah. If I want to, I may need to tovel, but I'm not an absolute chiyuv. If I bought the kli from the Nachri, I'm not automatically mechuyev to tovel. So such a contingent mitzvah, maybe the Rav Yah suggests, maybe you don't say Safek Daraisa L'chumra by such a mitzvah. Now, what's interesting is this may open up doors for the Rambam. Not only does the Mordechai put the Rambam and the Rav Yah together, it may just be practically they both hold Safek Lahakel. He might be saying more. Some of the notes that Kalim here point out, Midivrei Sofrim doesn't always mean Midi Rabbanan. This is a big, big issue. When Maseches Kiddushin, it comes up most famously at the beginning of Hilchos Ishos, the Rambam says, that there are three, the Mishnah says there are three Kinyani Kiddushin, Kesar Shtar and Bia, Kiddushin Da Bezam Alf. Rambam says, Shnei Midivrei Torah, Ve'ech Midivrei Sofer. Rambam says, Kinyan Kesar is Midivrei Sofer. What does that mean? There's a firestorm of discussion about that. Did the Rambam say the Kiddushin Kesar is Drabanan? Our minhag has been for centuries at least, we all get married with Kesar. So all marriage is Bezanah, only Drabanan. At least initially, only Drabanan. There does sound like that Rashi in Ksubas does quote the Hiyad Rabbein, who seemed to have held that way. Rabosov Shal Rashi, some of them anyhow, held that Kiddush HaKesef is Rabbanan. Rashi wasn't necessarily so happy about that. Other Rishonim weren't so happy about that. It's not clear, however, that the Rambam held that. When he said that's what the Kesef Mishnah quotes, the Rambam's son got involved in this discussion. Others, there are letters Rambam himself wrote about this, Rav Shalat points out. Midivrei Sofrim, in the Rambam uses the term Midivrei Sofrim probably to mean Torah Sheba'al Peh. The Rambam points out in the Hagdam to Pirush Mishnayos, there's Torah Sheba'al Peh in the Torah, there's Torah Sheba'al Peh in the Drabanan. All Drabanans aren't obviously Torah Sheba'al Peh because they're not in Chumash, but as we said before, something that's learned from a drasha is also Torah Shabbat, and it's Daraisa. Halacha Moshe Sina is Torah Shabbat, and it's Daraisa. Takanas Rabbanan, Gzeiris Rabbanan, Minhagim is Rabbanan, and those are Torah Shabbat, Mishrabbanan. So Midivrei Sofrim could mean more broadly things we know through the Sofrim, through the Chachmei HaMasorah, either because they invented the Din Rabbanan, or because they discovered or interpreted the Din Daraisa. Midivrei Sofrim is probably, most probably, a broader term in the Rambam. So the Rambam is perhaps being a little ambiguous here by saying Midivrei Sofrim. Does he mean it's learned from a drasha, but it's Daraisa, or does he mean it's Rabbanan? So hard to know for sure what the Rambam's opinion is. And again, the fact that he's Mekel on Mashkanta, yes, it's in Ibaidla of Shita, as Riff said, and yes, the Rambam is suing the Safik Lahakal, but that could be because of Safik Rabban Lakula, or it could be because of the Rav Yaz principle, that this is a type of, even if it's Daraisa, it's not an Achi of Gamur, it's a different type of din, different type of mitzvah, and as such, we don't apply Safik Lachumra. So far we had two sort of contexts, or two levels in which this Daraisa Rabban question plays out. Number one, just in terms of interpreting the psukim. Number two is in terms of nafke minas lahalacha, and that is specifically, you know, how you deal with suffik tvias kelim, mashkanta, or other cases we have a suffik. And again, when you see suffik lahakel, it could be because of the drabbanan, or it could be, you know, because of the Rav Yaz alternative svar. It will close with a third layer, a third field. In which a third context in which this Daraisa Drabanan question plays itself out. In addition to how you interpret the psukim, in addition to Nafkimiyas Lahalacha, specifically Safik, there's a third area which is, if you will, Nafkimiyas Bahashkafa. What's the Tam Hadin? And in discussing this, we sort of come back to where we began. We opened by saying that, you know, Shechter as Nusach, the first question you ask, you come across a new din, if it's Daraisa, what's the source of Sukkim? Is Drabanan, if they ma'atiknu. That's ultimately the source of a din Drabanan, is Chazal or Misakin for some reason. Chazal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted Chazal limited authority to invent new din Drabanan. It's a Chiddush Nifla, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Chazal the power to create new din Drabanan, and indeed he did. But that the power is, that authority is limited. Chazal can't willy-nilly just make a didrabban because I feel like it. There has to be a valid sorech. So yeah, you always have to ask yourself, if you come across a didrabbanan, ripnei ma'atikna. So we said, well, the first question is it daraisa or is it drabban? Okay, so we dealt with, is it daraisa? If it's daraisa, what's the pasuk? Are those psukim indeed the source for this didaraisa, bipshuto or drasha or not? If it's drabanan, interesting question. If they ma tiknu, that's actually an interesting question. What is? If it's a din, so okay, the pasuk says, yeah, I told them. If it's a din drabanan, what? Out of whole cloth, Chazal just sort of invented this whole new concept. I mean, there's tefillah for tumah, okay, but that's not this. There's kashering, but that's not at all this. As we said before, so if you want, you can create like a Venn diagram, you know. There are cases where you have to do tefillah, but not hagala, hagala, but not tefillah, tefillah for tahara, but not tefillah. You know, the processes aren't exactly the same, and they don't apply in all the same cases. Why would Chazal create this third new process called tefillah's kelim? For what purpose? So that's a third level in terms of pushing back against saying drabanan. Number one, what it means drabanan. I have all these psukim. The Gemara sounds like they're drashas gemuros. Mino hanimili tzrichasas. But again, Mishom push back. Okay. On the other hand, the Ramban has his pushbacks against that. And then the second question of, okay, is Safik Daraisa, is Safik L'chumra L'kula? That's a more of a Shaila. But again, the other problem with saying it's Drabbanan, other than, but I have Psukim, is why? Why would they have created such a Drabbanan? It's interesting. Lecha Mishnah seems to address himself to this. Lecha Mishnah of the Rambam. The Rambam says, the Rambam sounds like it's Drabanan. And he's Helacha Hey. The other Rishonim maybe didn't say the Rambam that way, back and forth. the divrei sofrim, does that mean daraisa? Does that mean drabanan? Then here's this line. He says, yeah. He says, maybe the Rambam means it wasn't Chazal or Masakin it. Chazal or Masakin it, Rabban Lechemesh. It says, Kedei Lahathira, not Lahathira with a tough, but Lahathira, to make it Tahar. Lataharo, we would say usually. Midei Giulei Goyim. To be Matarit from the Trefa flavor. Maybe it wasn't fully removed through Hagaola. Chazal wanted to do Tevilo also.
That's curious. What does that mean? I mean, HaTorah, the trefa flavor is removed through Hagala, through the boiling hot water, but Midrabanan, it's not fully removed until you take it to mikvah also? What does that mean? And the Lecha Mishnah says, goes on to say, also, it's very difficult because the Gemara is clear that, again, not all cases do you require both. There are, wooden kelim don't require tevila, though they may require Hagala. And on the other, new metal kelim require tevila, but not hagala. So the Lecha Mishnah defines this to be very sticky. But I think, if you look back at the Ramban on the Torah, I think the Ramban has a line that I think explains this. When the Ramban introduces this idea, says, I think that this well may be the Rabbanon. The Ramban, and again, back in Matos, Paraglam and Aleph, Pasuk, what was it? Pasuk Chaf Gimel? Pasuk Chaf Dalet? Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Libi meharher od lomar. My lave is thinking, maybe this tefillah is all midrabana. Maybe the pasuk is asmachta. And the unklus. And then he has a line. V'hitzrichu osoch hachamim b'chle ha-matchos b'vad? Why did Chazal demand it only in metal? If you say it's daraisa, Ramban Kedarko, in the Pirush HaTorah in particular, is so dense. Mamasha, one phrase is like, b'miyashis, b'mirames, takashas. It was drabanan, Chazal demanded it only by metal, meaning, if it's daraisa, it only applies to metal, because that's what the pasuk says. Zav, kesef, nehosh, etc. If it's drabanan, so why they demand it only by metal? He says, because metal kalim, some are used in the fire, some are used as a kli rishon with liquid, some use a kli sheni, some just use cold. Interesting. And he says, v'zeh tarach talmud. We need to think about this more. So, overtly, again, he's being rames to Akasha, that if it's Rabbanan, why is it applied specifically to metal? But I think, if you think about what his answer was, his answer presupposes his answer to a more fundamental question, which is why did Chazal demand tefillas kelim at all if it's Rabbanan? And that is, it sounds a lot like Lecha Mishnah. It has to do with kashering. But what's he saying? Well, because metal kelim sometimes used for libun, sometimes need hagala, sometimes don't need anything. And therefore, so maybe what he means is it gets confusing. It's going to get confusing. The metal kelim is specifically confusing that sometimes I have a metal kli that gets in the nachri and I need to kasher it, but sometimes I don't. So last week I bought a metal fruit bowl from the nachri and I didn't have to kasher it. This week I bought a grill from the nachri. I'd have to kasher that if it was used. That became treif. That was used in heat. But I think, again, the Ramban is so dense, but I think if you unpack what he's saying is, yeah, in other words, by metal kalim, there's a real concern that you're in your mind going to think, well, when I bought the fruit bowl, I didn't have to kasher it, so I don't have to kasher the pot or the pan or the fork or the knife or the ladle or the grill either, and that's a big mistake. Wooden kalim are typically not used in heat, at least maybe Bizman, B'tkufas HaTanach. Cheres was probably overwhelmingly used with heat. Metal was very versatile. So metal, you had things that were used with heat, things were not used with heat. Things were used with a more intense heat, dry heat, or with a wet heat, or with no heat at all. So I think what Rabban is driving at is,
you're more likely to get confused by metal kalim and not kasher the ones that actually need to be kashered. Because last week you had one that didn't need to be kashered. Last week the rabbi told me I don't have to kasher the fruit bowl. I'm not going to go bother them again about the fork that I just bought. Metal kalim don't have to be kashered. Pottery is an issue, but metal is okay. So because of metal's versatility, the Ramban is saying, Chazal created the drabban of tefilas kalim. Why? I mean, you get metal kitchen tools, metal dining room tools from Nachri, they always go to mikveh. And therefore, presumably, you're always doing something. You get metal kalim from the Nachri, you never just buy it and use it. There always has to be some process. Presumably, that's going to help me to a little bit of a speed bump there. I'm just going to assume that I can, whenever I buy metal kalim, I have to think about it. I have to do stuff. I have to process it. I have to somehow make it right to come into my kitchen, come into my dining room. So now, that responds to the Lechem Mishnah's point. If it's Exera Atu Hagala, what does it mean Exera Atu Hagala, and why would they have imposed in all cases? No! I understand. Well, what does it mean Exera Drabanan? I think what that means is we're worried that you're going to, because some metal kalim don't require hechsher, you might mistakenly not be machsher any metal kalim, even the ones that do. So Chazal needs to have something that every metal kli always needs something. They weren't going to say it always needs to be kosher. It always needs to feel the mikvah. And in Hanami, they apply in all cases, even when it's new, or even when it's a fruit bowl. That was the whole point. Metal kalim always have to go to mikvah, so you're never going to be lulled into this false sense of security that metal kalim is just they buy them and use it. No. Metal kalim always needs something. Anyway, you're more likely to ask questions to make sure what type. Does this just need tefillah? Does it need tefillah and hagalah as well? If you say it's doraisa, the Rishonim here, including the Beis Yosef, quotes the Rishalmi, and the other Rishonim quoted Rishalmi. Or Zeruah quotes Rishalmi. Rishalmi says that it's like a tvilas hager. Why does a ger go to mikvah? He's not tummy. Min ha-Torah Nachrim cannot be tummy. Or as Reshef likes to quote a thing from the Rav, why does a Kohen Gadol go to mikvah Yom Kippur 5 times? Why? To become tahar? He is pristinely tahar. He spent a week making sure he's tahar. And if he's tummy, he doesn't have to go to mikvah now. He's going to need Harav Shemesh. He's disqualified already. What's he going to mikvah again and again and again and again? Well, what's going on? Every time he changes clothing, mikvah, what's that? What's the tefillas Kohen Gadol do? What does the tefillas Hager do? So what Yerushalmi seems to say is that the tefillah is usually a tefillah mitaheres. Usually a tefillah removes tumah. But there's a different type of tefillah, a tefillah hamikadeshas. A tefillah that adds kedusha. A nachri goes to mikvah, that endows him with kedusha, adds kedusha to Israel. The Kohen Gadol goes to mikvah, that endowed, that adds to his kedushas. Now he's right to do the next stage of the avodah Yom Kippur. The Rishalmi is saying, what are you taking the kalim to mikvah for? It's not that their tefillah come back to the point we said before. It's not tefillah for tumah v'tahara. This is tefillah of iser v'heter. But what? Not that there's tarfus, but totally unrelated. And this works well if you say tefillah's kalim is daraisa. It's a totally new idea. It's not for the tarfus. It's not for the tumah. It's to be mekadoshet. Just like people are kadosh, the way I eat, the way a Jew eats, eating is one of the processes that we share not only with all of humanity but with the entire animal kingdom. Everything alive needs to eat. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us the opportunity to take what's an incredibly mundane biological activity and do it in a way that endows it with kedusha. Do it in a way that, with discipline and with structure and with following HaKadosh Baruch Hu's guidelines, instead of just being a neutral act or worse, it becomes a vehicle for Kedusha. I'm going to eat as a form of Ovos Hashem. A part of that is my pots and pans, my kitchen and dining room are going to be a Jewish kitchen and Jewish dining room because I took them to mikvah. I was megayer my pots and pans. That's what the Yerushalmi is saying. I was megayer my forks and knives. I have Jewish cutlery. Like Jewish cutlery? Yeah. It's like a tefillah hager. So that Yerushalmi works fantastically if you say that tefillah is a real din daraisas. Okay, that's what it is. Hechsher is to remove tarfus, tam kicker. Tefillah letumah v'tahara
May paraduma and so forth. That's to remove tuma, and then tefilas kelim and nikachim and akum. That's to add kedusha, not to remove anything. It's to add kedusha. We'll see nafkaminas in this idea as we proceed. If you lechem mishnah even tries to stick this in this Yerushalmi into the drabanan, but I think with the Ramban's insight, that's probably a thorough difference. Again, you say deraisa drabanan plays itself in terms of how you interpret the psukim. That's where it comes from. Play itself out in terms of perhaps how you deal with Suffolk, unless you have the Rav Yaz approach to Suffolk. And number three, it may play itself out in Nafkamina, not only for Halacha of Suffolk, Nafkamina for Hashkaf. What is the Hashkaf? What's the time of the Kra? What's the Tam of Tilas Caleb? If you say it's Daraisa, then you have that Yerushalmi, that it's a form of Geirus. It's a Tzvila Mikadeshes. It's going to make my kitchen a Yiddish kitchen. It's going to make my dining room a Yiddish dining room. If you say that it's Drabanan, so then likely, it's like the Ramban seems to be saying, the way the Lechem Mishnah entertained, that then it's probably Chazal. It could be that Lechem Mishnah says that they create Midrabanan for this idea of Degeris, but more, I think, simpler, Derech HaMelech, is like the Ramban. Say that the Havmin of Lechem Mishnah. The Drabanan, there was this Yog to Hagalah scale. And particularly, Hagalah's kelim is complicated. You do need, you don't need. Especially the Ramban says, you know, some kelim need, some kelim don't need. And particularly metal kelim are confusing. Because metal is such a versatile material. You may have all different sorts of metal kelim that are used in different contexts. Some will need high-level liban, some will need low-level Hagalah. Maybe even Hagalah B'Kli Sheni, he says. Some don't need any Hagalah, any Hakshar. So that's really confusing. So Chazal put in an absolute, every metal kli suda, no matter how it's used, no matter whether it was used or whether it's new, always needs tefila, and that way you'll be sure. If it's a din drabanan, the chazal is a syag to make sure that you'll think carefully about whether I need to kasher this metal kli or not, rather than just blithely assuming, oh, last week's metal football was didn't need koshering, so probably this week's metal soup ladle does not need koshering either. So again, so this is just where have we been? We got a bird's eye view of the sugya of Tfilas Kelim. And that's how we began, and that's where we're going to continue. We spent the latter part of the Chabura, the bulk of the Chabura, on this question of Deraisa Drabanan, in terms of how the psukim play out, how you interpret the language of the Rambam, and then how you deal with the question of Safek, and the Rav Yah and the Rambam, and then the question of two approaches to the Tam, whether it's Doraisa and Beis Yerushalmi and Tzvi'as Geirus, or whether it's Drabanan, perhaps like the Ramban, Lechemishas Havamina, a siyag to protect Hag'olas Kalim on metal.